18.
If only the deepness hadn't come when it did, providing a threat that drove men to desperation, both in action and belief.
Kill him,
God whispered. Zane hung quietly in the mists, looking through Ellen Venture's open balcony doors. The mists swirled around him, obscuring him from the king's view.
You should kill him, God said again.
In a way, Zane hated Elland, though he had never met the man before today. Elland was everything that Zane should have been. Favored, privileged, pampered. He was Zane's enemy, a block in the road to domination, the thing that was keeping Straff, and therefore Zane, from ruling the central dominance. But he was also Zane's brother. Zane let himself drop through the mists, falling silently to the ground outside Keep Venture. He pulled his anchors up into his hand, three small bars he had been pushing on to hold himself in place. Vin would be returning soon, and he didn't want to be near the keep when she did. She had a strange ability to know where he was. Her senses were far more keen than any allomancer he had ever known or fought. Of course, she had been trained by the survivor himself.
I would have liked to have known him, Zane thought as he moved quietly across the courtyard. He was a man who understood the power of being mistborn, a man who didn't let others control him, a man who did what had to be done, no matter how ruthless it seemed.
Or so the rumors said. Zane paused beside the outer keep wall, below a buttress. He stooped, removing a cobblestone, and found the message left there by his spy inside Ellen's palace. Zane retrieved it, replaced the cobblestone, then dropped a coin and launched himself out into the night. Zane did not slink, nor did he creep, skulk, or cower. In fact, he didn't even like to hide. So he approached the Venture Army camp with a determined stride. It seemed to him that Mistborn spent too much of their existence hiding. True, anonymity offered some limited freedom. However, his experience had been that it bound them more than it freed them. It let them be controlled, and it let society pretend that they didn't exist. Zane strode toward a guard post where two soldiers sat beside a large fire. He shook his head. They were virtually useless, blinded by the firelight. Normal men feared the mists, and that made them less valuable. That wasn't arrogance, it was a simple fact. Allomancers were more useful and therefore more valuable than normal men. That was why Zane had tin eyes watching in the darkness as well. Those regular soldiers were more a formality than anything else.
Kill them, God commanded as Zane walked up to the guard post.
Zane ignored the voice, though it was growing more and more difficult to do so.
Halt! One of the guards said, lowering a spear. Who is that?
Zane pushed the spear offhandedly, flipping up the tip.
Who else would it be? He snapped, walking into the firelight.
Lord Zane, the other soldier said.
Summon the king, Zane said, passing the guard post. Tell him to meet me in the command tent.
But, my lord, the guard said, the hour is late. His majesty is probably...
Zane turned, giving the guard a flat stare. The mists swirled between them. Zane didn't even have to use emotional allomancy on the soldier. The man simply saluted, then rushed off into the night to do as commanded. Zane strode through the camp. He wore no uniform or mist cloak, but soldiers stopped and saluted as he passed. This was the way it should be. They knew him, knew what he was, knew to respect him. And yet a part of him acknowledged that if Straff hadn't kept his bastard son hidden, Zane might not be the powerful weapon that he was today. That secrecy had forced Zane to live a life of near squalor, while his half-brother Elland had been privileged.
but it also meant that Straff had been able to keep Zane hidden for most of his life. Even still, while rumors were growing about the existence of Straff's Mistborn, few realized that Zane was Straff's son. Plus, living a harsh life had taught Zane to survive on his own. He had become hard and powerful, things he suspected Elend would never understand. Unfortunately, one side effect of his childhood was that it had apparently driven him mad.
"Kill him," God whispered as Zane passed another guard.
The voice spoke every time he saw a person. It was Zane's quiet, constant companion. He understood that he was insane. It hadn't really been all that hard to determine, all things considered. Normal people didn't hear voices. Zane did. He found insanity no excuse, however, for irrational behavior. Some men were blind, others had poor tempers, still others heard voices. It was all the same in the end. A man was defined not by his flaws, but by how he overcame them. And so Zane ignored the voice. He killed when he wanted to, not when it commanded. In his estimation, he was actually quite lucky. Other madmen saw visions, or couldn't distinguish their delusions from reality. Zane, at least, could control himself. For the most part. He pushed on the metal clasps on the flaps of the command tent. The flaps flipped backward, opening for him as the soldiers to either side saluted. Zane ducked inside.
"My lord," said the Night Watch officer of command.
"Kill him," said God. "He's really not that important."
"Paper," Zane ordered, walking to the room's large table. The officer scrambled to comply, grabbing a stack of sheets. Zane pulled on the nib of the pen, flipping it across the room to his waiting hand. The officer brought the ink.
"There are troop concentrations and night patrols," Zane said, scribbling down some numbers and diagrams on the paper. "I observed them tonight while I was in Lúthadel."
"Very good, my lord," the soldier said. "We appreciate your help."
Zane paused. Then he slowly continued to write.
"Soldier, you are not my superior. You aren't even my equal. I am not helping you. I am seeing to the needs of my army. Do you understand?"
"Of course, my lord."
"Good," Zane said, finishing his notes and handing the paper to the soldier. "Now leave, or I'll do as a friend has suggested and ram this pen through your throat." The soldier accepted the paper, then quickly withdrew. Zane waited impatiently. Straff did not arrive. Finally, Zane cursed quietly and pushed open the tent flaps and strode out. Straff's tent was a blazing red beacon in the night, well lit by numerous lanterns. Zane passed the guards, who knew better than to bother him, and entered the king's tent. Straff was having a late dinner. He was a tall man, brown of hair, like both his sons, the two important ones, at least. He had fine nobleman's hands, which he used to eat with finesse. He didn't react as Zane entered.
"You're late," Straff said.
"Kill him," God said.
Zane clenched his fists. This command from the voice was the hardest to ignore.
"Yes," he said. "I'm late."
"What happened tonight?" Straff asked.
Zane glanced at the servants.
"We should do this in the command tent."
Straff continued to sip his soup, staying where he was, implying that Zane had no power to order him about. It was frustrating, but not unexpected. Zane had used virtually the same tactic on the Night Watch officer just moments before. He had learned from the best. Finally, Zane sighed, taking a seat. He rested his arms on the table, idly spinning a dinner knife as he watched his father eat. A servant approached to ask Zane if he wanted a meal, but he waved the man away.
"Kill Straff," God commanded. "You should be in his place. You are stronger than he is. You are more competent.
But I'm not as sane, Zane thought.
Well, Straff asked, do they have the Lord Ruler's Atrium or not?
I'm not sure, Zane said.
Does the girl trust you? Straff asked.
She's beginning to, Zane said. I did see her use Atium that once, fighting Set's assassins.
Straff nodded thoughtfully. He really was competent. Because of him, the Northern Dominance had avoided the chaos that prevailed in the rest of the Final Empire. Straff's ska remained under control, his noblemen quelled. True, he had been forced to execute a number of people to prove that he was in charge, but he did what needed to be done. That was one attribute in a man that Zane respected above all others, especially since he had trouble displaying it himself.
"Kill him!" God yelled. "You hate him. He kept you in squalor, forcing you to fight for your survival as a child."
"He made me strong," Zane thought.
"Then use that strength to kill him."
Zane grabbed the carving knife off the table. Straff looked up from his meal, then flinched just slightly as Zane sliced the flesh of his own arm. He cut a long gash into the top of his forearm, drawing blood. The pain helped him resist the voice. Straff watched for a moment, then waved for a servant to bring Zane a towel so he wouldn't get blood on the rug.
"You need to get her to use Atium again," Straff said. "Elland may have been able to gather one or two beads. We'll only know the truth if she runs out."
He paused, turning back to his meal.
"Actually, what you need to do is get her to tell you where the stash is hidden, if they even have it."
Zane sat, watching the blood seep from the gash on his forearm.
"She's more capable than you think, father."
Straff raised an eyebrow.
"Don't tell me you believe those stories, Zane. The lies about her and the Lord Ruler?"
"How do you know they are lies?"
"Because of Elland," Straff said. "That boy is a fool. He only controls Lúthedain because every nobleman with half a wit in his head fled the city. If that girl were powerful enough to defeat the Lord Ruler, I sincerely doubt that your brother could ever have gained her loyalty."
Zane cut another slice in his arm. He didn't cut deeply enough to do any real damage, and the pain worked as it usually did. Straff finally turned from his meal, masking a look of discomfort. A small, twisted piece of Zane took pleasure from seeing that look in his father's eyes. Perhaps it was a side effect of his insanity.
"Anyway," Straff said, "did you meet with Elland?"
Zane nodded. He turned to a serving girl.
"Tea," he said, waving his uncut arm.
"Elland was surprised. He wanted to meet with you, but he obviously didn't like the idea of coming into your camp. I doubt he'll come."
"Perhaps," Straff said. "But don't underestimate the boy's foolishness. Either way, perhaps now he understands how our relationship will proceed."
So much posturing, Zane thought.
By sending this message, Straff took a stand. He wouldn't be ordered about or even inconvenienced on Ellen's behalf.
"Being forced into a siege inconvenienced you, though," Zane thought with a smile.
What Straff would have liked to do was attack directly, taking the city without parley or negotiations. The arrival of the Second Army made that impossible. Attack now and Straff would be defeated by Set. That meant waiting. Waiting in a siege, until Elland saw reason and joined with his father willingly. But waiting was something Straff disliked. Zane didn't mind as much. It would give him more time to spar with the girl. He smiled. As the tea arrived, Zane closed his eyes, then burned tin to enhance his senses. His wounds burst to life, minor pains becoming great, shocking him to wakefulness. There was a part of all this he wasn't telling Straff.
"She's coming to trust me," he thought. "And there's something else about her. She's like me. Perhaps she could understand me. Perhaps she could save me.
He sighed, opening his eyes and using the towel to clean his arm. His insanity frightened him sometimes, but it seemed weaker around Vin. That was all he had to go on for the moment. He accepted his tea from the serving girl, long braid, firm chest, homely features, and took a sip of the hot cinnamon. Straff raised his own cup, then hesitated, sniffing delicately. He eyed Zane.
"Poisoned tea, Zane."
Zane said nothing.
"Birchbane, too," Straff noted. "That's a depressingly unoriginal move for you."
Zane said nothing. Straff made a cutting motion. The girl looked up with terror as one of Straff's guards stepped toward her. She glanced at Zane, expecting some sort of aid, but he just looked away. She yelled pathetically as the guard pulled her off to be executed.
"She wanted the chance to kill him," he thought. "I told her it probably wouldn't work."
Straff just shook his head. Though not a full mistborn, the king was a tin-eye. Still, even for one with such an ability, sniffing birchbane amid the cinnamon was an impressive feat.
"Zane, Zane," Straff said. "What would you do if you actually managed to kill me?"
"If I actually wanted to kill you," Zane thought, "I'd use that knife, not poison."
But he let Straff think what he wished. The king expected assassination attempts, so Zane provided them. Straff held something up, a small bead of atium.
"I was going to give you this, Zane, but I see that we'll have to wait. You need to get over these foolish attempts on my life. If you were ever to succeed, where would you get your atium?"
Straff didn't understand, of course. He thought that atium was like a drug, and assumed that Mistborn relished using it. Therefore, he thought he could control Zane with it. Zane let the man continue in his misapprehension, never explaining that he had his own personal stockpile of the metal. That, however, brought him to face the real question that dominated his life. God's whispers were returning now that the pain was fading. And of all the people the voice whispered about, Straff Venture was the one who most deserved to die.
"Why?" God asked. "Why won't you kill him?"
Zane looked down at his feet.
"Because he's my father," he thought, finally admitting his weakness.
Other men did what they had to. They were stronger than Zane.
"You're insane, Zane," Straff said.
Zane looked up.
"Do you really think you could conquer the Empire yourself if you were to kill me? Considering your particular malady, do you think you could run even a city?"
Zane looked away.
"No."
Straff nodded.
"I'm glad we both understand that."
"You should just attack," Zane said. "We can find the atium once we control Luthadel." Straff smiled, then sipped the tea. The poisoned tea. Despite himself, Zane started, sitting up straight.
"Don't presume to think you know what I'm planning, Zane," Straff said. "You don't understand half as much as you assume."
Zane sat quietly, watching his father drink the last of the tea.
"What of your spy?" Straff asked.
Zane laid the note on the table.
"He's worried that they might suspect him. He has found no information about the atium."
Straff nodded, setting down the empty cup.
"You'll return to the city and continue to befriend the girl."
Zane nodded slowly, then turned and left the tent. Straff thought he could feel the birchbane already seeping through his veins, making him tremble. He forced himself to remain in control, waiting for a few moments. Once he was sure Zane was distant, he called for a guard.
"Bring me Amaranta,"
Straff ordered. Quickly!
The soldier rushed to do his master's bidding. Straff sat quietly, tent rustling in the evening breeze, a puff of mist floating to the floor from the once-open flap. He burned tin, enhancing his senses.
Yes, he could feel the poison within him, deadening his nerves. He had time, however, as long as an hour, perhaps, and so he relaxed.
For a man who claimed he didn't want to kill Straff, Zane certainly spent a lot of effort trying. Fortunately, Straff had a tool even Zane didn't know about, one that came in the form of a woman. Straff smiled as his tin-enhanced ears heard soft footsteps approaching in the night. The soldiers sent Amaranta right in. Straff hadn't brought all of his mistresses with him on the trip, just his 10 or 15 favorites. Mixed in with the ones he was currently bedding, however, were some women that he kept for their effectiveness rather than their beauty. Amaranta was a good example. She had been quite attractive a decade before, but now she was creeping up into her late 20s. Her breasts had begun to sag from childbirth, and every time Straff looked at her, he noticed the wrinkles that were appearing on her forehead and around her eyes. He got rid of most women long before they reached her age. This one, however, had skills that were useful. If Zane heard that Straff had sent for the woman this night, he'd assume that Straff had simply wanted to bed her. He'd be wrong.
My lord,
Amaranta said, getting down on her knees. She began to disrobe. Well, at least she's optimistic, Straff thought. He would have thought that after 4 years without being called to his bed, she would understand. Didn't women realize when they were too old to be attractive?
Keep your clothing on, woman, he snapped.
Amaranta's face fell, and she laid her hands in her lap, leaving her dress half undone, one breast exposed, as if she were trying to tempt him with her aging nudity.
I need your antidote, he said, quickly.
Which one, my lord? She asked.
She wasn't the only herbalist Straff kept. He learned scents and tastes from 4 different people. Amaranta, however, was the best of them.
Birchbane, Straff said. And maybe something else, I'm not sure.
Another general potion, then, my lord?
Amaranta asked. Straff nodded curtly. Amaranta rose, walking to his poison cabinet. She lit the burner at the side, boiling a small pot of water as she quickly mixed powders, herbs, and liquids. The concoction was her particular specialty, a mixture of all the basic poison antidotes, remedies, and reagents in her repertoire. Straff suspected that Zane had used the birchbane to cover something else. Whatever it was, however, Amaranta's concoction would deal with, or at least identify it. Straff waited uncomfortably as Amaranta worked, still half-naked. The concoction needed to be prepared freshly each time, but it was worth the wait. She eventually brought him a steaming mug. Straff gulped it, forcing down the harsh liquid despite its bitterness. Immediately he began to feel better. He sighed, another trap avoided, as he drank the rest of the cup to be certain. Amaranta knelt expectantly again.
Go, Straff ordered.
Amaranta nodded quietly. She put her arm back through the dress's sleeve, then retreated from the tent. Straff sat stewing, empty cup cooling in his hand. He knew he held the edge. As long as he appeared strong before Zane, the Mistborn would continue to do as commanded. Probably.